Blog Talk Radio.
You will not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in four parts without commercial interruptions. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading a charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Spiro Agnew to eat hog maws confiscated from a Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by the Schaefer Award Theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia. The revolution will not give your mouth sex appeal. The revolution will not get rid of the nub. The revolution will not make you look 5 pounds thinner because the revolution will not be televised, brother. There will be no pictures of you and Willie Mae pushing that shopping cart down the block on the dead run or trying to slide that color TV into a stolen ambulance. NBC will not be able to predict the winner at 8:32 on Report from 29 District. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of Whitney Young being run out of Harlem on a rail with a brand new process. There will be no slow motion or still life of Roy Wilkins strolling through Watts in a red, black, and green liberation jumpsuit that he has been saving for just the proper occasion. Green Acres, Beverly Hillbillies, and Hooterville Junction will no longer be so damn relevant, and women will not care if Dick finally got down with Jane on Search for Tomorrow, because black people will be in the street looking for a brighter day. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no highlights on the 11 o'clock news and no pictures of Harry R. Woman Liberationist and Jackie Onassis blowing her nose. The theme song will not be written by Jim Webb or Francis Scott Key, nor sung by Glenn Campbell, Tom Jones, Johnny Cash, Engelbert Humperdinck, or The Rare Earth. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be right back after a message about a white tornado, white lightning, or white people. You will not have to worry about a dove in your bedroom, the tiger in your tank, or the giant in your toilet bowl. The revolution will not go better with Coke. The revolution will not fight germs that may cause bad breath. The revolution will put you in the driver's seat. The revolution will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised. The revolution will be no rerun, brothers. The revolution will be live.
Hello and welcome to Provocative Thought, intimately known as PT, striving to awaken those who are asleep, stimulate those who are awakened, feed those who are starving, and nurture those who seek to know. I am your host, Carlton Steed, a self-proclaimed student of life in the search, discovery, and revelation of life on life terms. First, I'd like to thank We Talk Productions for allowing me to host this show. I'd also like to thank the creator for allowing me to be. You can contact the show by dialing 516-531-9540. Please press the number one to speak. You can contact the show by dialing 516-531-9540. Please press the number one to speak. You can reach us on the internet at www.blogtalkradio.com. Go to search, type in We Talk Productions, and listen to the show live. You can also contact us on Facebook at Provocative Thought PT Community Organization. Tonight's topic, protective capacity. Has everyone's protective capacity been diminished That is the question for the for tonight. You're probably familiar with the term protective capacities, referring to other characteristics related to child safety. Parent or caregiver with these characteristics is able to provide safety for his or her child in response to threats in ways that keep the child safe from harm, right? So building protective capacities contribute to a reduction in risk, right? Child getting to the edge of the bed, grab them, you know, all the good stuff, right? But how can a parent guide the life of a child successfully with so many impairments and obstacles in the way? How can you protect a child from something you may not be aware of? Something that is incorporated into your life, your culture, your being. A parent's ability to guide the guide and protect their own life will impact on their ability to guide and protect the life of the child. We are under attack, but some of us do not perceive that they are under attack. Recently, children have been under attack in the so-called education system, with books depicting minor children in graphic sexual literature and sexual acts. Same-sex sexual acts, stuff like that, right? Tonight's show is not about that, but that's one example. From dictionary.com, attack means to engage in physical violence against something with the intent to cause physical harm, damage, or death. Attacking doesn't have to result in harm. However, for example, a person may be attacked by bees but manage to escape before actually getting stung. Someone or something that attacks is an attacker, right? Very, very basic there, right? May I add, the attack on the mind, your brain, your thought, your inner being, right? Webster's, right? Talked about psychological warfare definition and meaning. Psychological warfare, things that are done to make someone, such as an enemy or opponent, become less confident or to feel hopeless, afraid, etc. Those are very important to understand. Those confidence, feel hopeless, and afraid, right? The Army used radio broadcasts into enemy territory as a form of psychological warfare, all right? This is during a period where people are actually trying to physically kill each other, right? They still use psychological warfare. So for people who think that is not of any value or of any consequence. In order to protect and guide the life of a child, you must first be capable of perceiving, identifying the things, the weapons that attack and tend to cause physical harm, damage, or death done to make someone, such as an enemy or opponent, become less confident or to feel hopeless, afraid, right? So you got to be able to identify what these things are being done to you that makes you feel, or someone, become less confident, right? Feel hopeless and afraid. There's nothing I can do about it. You hear people say, oh, that's the way it is. That's that kind of attitude, right? It perpetuates that attitude. That's the way it is. Like that, that's the way it is. Can't do nothing about it. Can't fight City Hall. You heard all these people saying this, but that are basically come from this chain of thought or feeling or emotion or of just, you know, state of being, right? Become less confident. You can't do something you already just feel like you can't do nothing about it. Hopeless, there's absolutely nothing I can do about it, and you're afraid to do something about it, right? So, these things include, but are not limited to, spiritual, psychological, or mental, physical, or food, politics, culture, education, social, and environmental things, right? There are many things that cause people to be less confident or to feel hopeless and afraid, many things, right? So the inability to improve the quality of life, impact on violence and the cycle of violence, the desire to get high or use toxins, whether the desire without the desire, there is no demand, right? So if you don't want something in this case, right? If you don't want to or desire to use, right? There was no demand for it. So if there's no demand, without a demand, we have no market for the sale of toxins that you consume, that you choose to consume, knowing they are toxins, right? So in this case, you are the first line of defense. You, who you are as a person, right? The drug problem is also a human problem. Fear will either propel you to excel or deteriorate. It is a hell of a ball and chain and accelerant, right? It is truly a double-edged sword. Hopelessness and fear can be exhibited in the violence used, believed as necessary, and is frequently used to address conflict and the absence of de-escalation skills or the desire to even de-escalate. I heard a brother on YouTube saying he ain't interested in solving it no other kind of way but on the street. He didn't even have the desire to de-escalate the conflict, the violent conflict. If you cannot protect yourself, you cannot protect your child. In fact, in some cases, you will perpetuate and negatively infect their quality and your quality of life, and ultimately untimely demise. That demise may come psychologically, spiritually, and physically, right? This will impact on your devolution socially, culturally, and politically. This is evidenced by obvious destructive cultures that ultimately rip families apart, right? For example, gang cultures, right? Sexual exploitative cultures, drug cultures, etc., right? May I propose that the best way to destroy a man is to get him to buy into his destruction, to get him to, you know, go along with it, right? And to feel hopeless about his destruction. I don't know which is the worst, but the end result is the same. He's destroyed. Protect simply means to keep safe from harm, injury, victimization, and disenfranchisement, right? That refers and applies to adults and children. Ask yourself, are you safe? Proverbs 14:12 says, there's a way which seems right to a man, but the end thereof are the ways of death, right? They say, even in laughter, the heart is sorrowful, and the end of that merit, laughter and amusement, right? At the end of all that having fun is heaviness, right? Heavy-hearted, right? Downness, you know, you don't feel good at all. The backslider in heart shall be filled with his own ways, and a good man shall be satisfied from himself. The simple believeth every word, but the prudent man looketh well to his going. A wise man feareth and departeth from evil, but the fool rages and is confident. Right? So Though this proverb may only relate to worship to some, I assure you it is applicable to our very existence, believer or non-believer. To know is an ultimate matter of spiritual, psychological, and physical life and death. At the root of a protective capacity lies the first line of defense, morals and ethics, guidelines for behavior, ideas of what is right and wrong. You don't have to be wealthy, rich, and middle class to perpetuate these standards. In fact, being wealthy or rich or middle class does not guarantee that these standards are present and adhered to, right? This is you. From UN.org, right? EcoSo. Talks about the family, right? Family is very important. And it seems to be, I don't know, it just seems to be a thousand attacks on the family. But we're going to talk about a couple of them. I don't have a lot of time, and you're going to hit on a couple of things that are impacted on families, right? As a basic, let's say the family, as a basic and essential building block of society, family have a crucial role in social development. The family has a crucial role in social development. They bear the primary responsibility for education and socialization of children, as well as instilling values of citizenship and belonging in a society. So what this definition lacks is the moral, ethical values that are instilled into still through the family. They didn't mention that. I'm mentioning it. I'm grafting that onto the definition, like the folks did with the definition of a man and a woman. That's my graph right there. So anyway, the family as a child rearing unit of society, right? Let's say family is the primary social unit, as I just said. The institution is older than that of religious state, religion or state. So the family, of course it is, right? Because, you know, before you can have a state, you got to have people getting together, creating these families. Two people, bam, the kid, you got a family, right? So that makes sense right there. Children are born and nurtured in the family until such time as they grow into adults and found their own families, right? They say at any given time, a family is composed of adults, at least two of whom live in a sexual relationship which is socially approved, and offspring or adopted children, right? Anybody who lives together, right? It could be related or not related, right? It could be adopted children. It's you and your woman or you and whoever. Somebody else's woman, y'all could be family. That might not be right, but that's what a family is, right? So might not be traditional, right? It's two people living together in a sexual relationship, which is socially approved, and offspring, they have offspring that is biological or adopted, right? So that makes the door open for a lot of individuals to consider themselves as a family, right? Not what the show is about, right? Because basically, people see a family as a man and a woman and the children, right? The offspring, right? Be they all adopted or biological. Not what today's show is about. All right? So I just want to skirt around that a little bit. In doing so, they share amenities, generate family bonds and resources, and maintain a common culture. Family acts as an institution to satisfy biological and social cultural needs such as sexual satisfaction, procreation, economic survival, child rearing, and education, and personal as well as cultural identification as participating members of a neighborhood or social group. And as I said previously, moral and ethical values are instilled in children through the family. I'm grafting this on here like they did with the definition of woman and a man. So if they can do it, I can do it. It's relevant. It is real, right? Now, it may not happen in a lot of families, moral, ethical values. It was strong moral, ethical values. But that's what a family's supposed to do. Like, if you don't know right from wrong, how are you even walking out of your house? How do you exist in your house? And I don't see that being mentioned in here. But the other stuff they're saying, you know, it's good stuff, right? You know. So anyway, that's how important the family is, right? That's the beginning, right, of working together, learning who you are, how you function. How you function in that household, how you function in that community, how you function in that group of people you might be a part of, or that nation you're a part of, right? Because all of that will be impacted upon you learning. And if you don't have any, depending on your moral, ethical value system, impact on how you behave, right? Even if you're acting outside of your moral, ethical value system, you know, it still have an impact on you, right? So now, that's how important the family is. Anything that seeks to destroy the members of the family unit is an attack, a threat to the family unit, right? Ephesians 6:12, the King James Version says, "We wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places." I said that last week because that seems so real. Like, it's like, wow, I probably could say that almost every show. And just going to go to the example that came to last week. This, I didn't use this example, but it's one of the things that we're talking about. The Daily Mail said that it was the trans swimmer, Leah Thomas, was allowed to use a trans woman, right, which is a man who identifies as a woman. It was allowed to use the female's locker room, right? That's where the swimming meet, right? That's where the women are, right, undressing. It said, "Trans swimmer Leah Thomas dropped her pants and exposed her male genitalia in a woman's locker room after a meet," claimed the University of Kentucky athlete Riley Gaines. So Riley Gaines, I saw the video of her. She seemed like she was shocked and embarrassed. And, you know, she claimed that they weren't warned beforehand that they would be sharing a locker room with Leah, right? The locker room, they was in the locker room. They turned around. There was a 6'4", biological man dropping his pants. And they said, "We were exposed to male genitalia," she said. Gaines is asking the NCAA for separate locker rooms for gendered athletes. So I said, when you look at the protective capacity of human beings, who are they protecting here? Who's getting the protection, right? No one provided protection for these unsuspecting women. They are being forced to accept that a man can be a woman if he identifies as a female or a woman, and that man should be afforded the same accommodations as females, in this case, share locker room with females who are basically undressing right down to the skin. Because I think they wear a bathing suit, they got to take that off, so they butt naked, you know. So I guess they don't mind being butt naked in front of each other. But they do mind being butt naked in front of a man, right? One woman stated they did not give consent, and I think it was gay, for a trans woman, right, a male, to be in the locker room. They did not give consent. They didn't consent to anybody sharing a locker room with them. So then she said she's asking for separate locker rooms for transgender athletes, right? That's it. That is not a show of power, but a show of powerlessness, right? Because she's asking. That you somewhere standing nude, and you asking, that's like, you know, a man walks in your ladies' locker room, you're going to ask me you know, ask the NCAA, hey, could you please not tell these men to walk into the locker room? You know, you got to tell them. And you got to make a tell that individual to get out, right? Anyway, power is the vehicle that allows the trans woman to enter the female locker room and bare his genitals without their consent or even informing them. That's power. In short, he had the balls, pun intended. There is another incident in a high school where a male who identified as female raped a female in a locker room, right? I think it was high school or middle school. I don't even know, think it was high school. Anyway, the school authorized him to be accommodated by using the female locker room. And he raped a young female that was in there. Just examples of how the protective capacity is diminished by government when it comes to privacy, comfort, feelings, safety of these females. Right? That is what is most important. Women don't want males in the locker room with them. They feel violated, and some actually get physically violated or raped. Protective capacity is not limited to children. It is inclusive of all people, children and adults, young and old. Protective capacity means behavioral, cognitive, and emotional characteristics that can specifically and directly be associated with a person's ability and willingness to care for and keep a child safe. As I said, I grafted the definition and means to keep anybody safe. That's a protective capacity. You got to understand. I'm just using that as intro into my definition of protective capacity, because you can't keep a child safe if you can't keep yourself safe, right? Childwelfare.gov says, what are protective factors in the community? Well, protective factors to promote well-being. Protective factors are conditions or attributes in the individual's, family's, community, or the larger society that, when present, mitigate or eliminate risks in families and communities that, when present, increase the health and well-being of children and families. So if you're talking about increasing the well-being of children and families or people, right, you can see where these transgender people were a threat to the protective capacity of these people, right? They weren't protected. To the people who are responsible for protecting these people, you're responsible for protecting the minor child, and you're responsible. Responsible, you have a responsibility for protecting the young adults, but apparently that didn't happen. Protective factor number one is nurturing and attachment. A child's early experience of being nurtured and developing a bond with caring adult affects all aspects of behavior and development. When parents and children have strong, warm feelings for one another, children develop trust, and their parents will provide what they need to thrive, including love, acceptance, positive guidance, and protection. I'm going to add morals and ethics everywhere I read something on here. All right? It is without it, you all over the place. We're all over the place. We got men walking in the locker room with women, right? And I see people arguing that, you know, they just started that. That wasn't the way it always was. They just started that, you know, a couple of years ago with this whole thing separating the men from the women in the bathroom. That before that, it was one bathroom. And I can't imagine that, because I can see a lot of people getting the back of their head blown off, walking in the bathroom while somebody's chick is in there. And that's going to be like, that's going to increase the homicide rate or the gun assault in a lot of places that I know. You know, so fights and all that, knife attacks, or whatever they knock you in the head with. Not a good idea. All right? So it doesn't matter what they did in the past. These women today don't want men walking in the bathroom with them. They don't want to be in there like that. And I'm sure that their fathers and their parents don't want that either. A lot of them. right? Research showed that babies who receive affection and nourishment from their parents had the best chances of healthy development, right? So we need a healthy parent in order to be protective of children, right? So this goes back to the adult. The child's relationship with a consistent caring adult in the early years of is associated later in life with better academic grades, healthier behaviors, more positive peer interactions, and an increased ability to cope with stress. I'm going to say that that young lady that was talking about this man walking in and then undressing himself, you know, seeing his genitalia, she seemed to handle that pretty well. So she must have had a lot of parental support in her life. And I know people that wouldn't handle that well at all. Dude might even have got jumped it right up in the locker room. Protective factor number two, knowledge of parenting for child and youth development. There is extensive research linking healthy child development to effective parenting, right? Children thrive when parents provide not only affection, but also respectful communication and listening, consistent rules and expectations, and safe opportunities that promote independence. So safe opportunities that promote independence, listening, consistent rules and expectations. So that's the closest they come to morals and ethics. Right? I don't know why I don't want to use those words, because all it is shared ways of ideas about what is right and what is wrong, which we seem to be arguing about to this day. Some things seem to be a no-brainer, but people find the need to argue anyway. Successful parenting fosters psychological adjustments, helps children succeed in school, encourages curiosity about the world, and motivates children to achieve. So, factor three, parental resilience. Parents who can cope with stress of everyday life as well as occasional crises have resilience. They have the flexibility and inner strength necessary to bounce back when things are not going well. See, these are the parents' attributes, because parents teach children. Children learn from watching their parents, listening to their parents, believe it or not. I know a lot of people think they're not listening, but they hear what you're saying. Multiple stressors such as family, history of abuse or neglect, health problems, marital conflict or domestic or community violence, right? And financial stresses such as unemployment and poverty and homelessness may reduce a parent's capacity to cope effectively with the typical day-to-day stresses of raising a child, right? You know, well, I don't know if people know that. I call parents up sometimes, and I've had a history of calling people, and, hey, they at work, they don't want to bother with you. I just got home from work. I'm going to work. Hey, I work. This kid need to be doing, you know, X, Y, Z. It's not me, it's the kid, you know, so stress, right? Domestic violence situation, people got to get up out of there because their boyfriend is just attacking them, right? Or threatening, right? So social connections, right? Parents and caregivers with a social network of emotionally supportive friends, family, and neighbors, right? People they can call on when they need somebody, right? No man's an island, right? Research has shown that parents who are isolated and have few social connections are at higher risk of maltreating their children. Number five, concrete supports, right? You know, if you need something, right, again, right? Identify and access resources, rental assistance, you need beds, you need a bill paid for, something like that. You know, providing concrete support may also help prevent the unintended neglect, because, you know, you don't have gas and you may not have heat. So you might be using one space heater to heat up your whole house, right? Or blankets or something like that, right? You might be using the electric oven to heat the house, right? That, you know, or nothing. You know, we don't know, right? So it looks like neglect, but it's neglect based on, I don't know, it's an economic situation. I don't know, mismanagement, or you just, you know, the bills are too high. You know, the bills are, utility bills are high nowadays. I don't see how some people are living, especially in the winter. Then they have number six on, they talk about social emotional competence of children, right? Parents support healthy social emotional development in children when they model how to express and communicate emotions effectively, self-regulate, and make friends. A child's social and emotional competence is crucial to sound relationships with family, adults, and peers. Right? Delayed social emotional development may obstruct healthy relationships. Right? Early intervention of such delays and early assistance for children and parents can provide support for family relationships and sustain positive and appropriate development. So the question here is, why is the state or any interest groups trying to supersede the natural and constitutional authority and responsibility of the parent, right? Trans swimmer Leah Thomas dropped her pants and exposed her male genitalia in a women's locker room after the meet, claims University of Kentucky athlete Riley Gaines, right? Who wasn't warned or forewarned of anything. Nobody knew it. Ah! There's a man in here, you know. So, as I said, you know, last week and maybe the week before, everybody's not on board with this whole thing about what you say you are being different than what you actually are. What you know, everybody's not on board with that. This is a perfect example of that. And these women, no lawsuit that I know of involved, but they were offended, violated by this action, right? What I'm saying is that we're not looking at, we're not protecting them. They were unprotected. No one protected them. And only a parent could not have protected them from that, because I guess they never assumed that this individual would be coming into the women's locker room, right? So now you know that you have to be very inclusive in your conversations about this, the diversity of people coming into the your area, right? Your personal area, right? Then they talk about from repository .city, UEDU, right? They're talking about the ACEs, Adverse Childhood Experiences, right? Which not always something that the parent does to the child, but we're going to go through this year anyway. But these are all things that impact on the capacity to protective capacity of the individual, right? You talk about these things. All these things are basically related to the in the home and maybe some things that that are out of the control of the parent. Right, but I assure you there are many things that are at our throats, at our lives, that we are I don't know, we seem to be have that hopeless, I can't do anything about it feeling about that's the way it is, just like that, that's the way it is feeling about it. And we're gonna get to those things further down the line. These are things that are within the parent, within the household. ACEs, malignant impact on student functioning in school, right? Research indicates that ACEs have a malignant impact on student functioning in schools, right? Specifically, bullying and harassment, peer victimization, violence, depression, and anxiety, right? Well, that's a no-brainer. I'm being bullied. I don't want to go to school, right? I'm being harassed. I don't want to go to school. I can't think, right? I feel depressed. I'm gonna knock one of these jokers in the head if they say something about me I don't like, right? Now you suspend it, right? Now we got anxiety going on because, you know, hey, you anticipating these people assaulting you verbally and or physically, right? When you go to school, ACEs significantly increase the risk of school engagement, dropout, suicide ideation, and drug use when compared to students who have not endured any of these adverse childhood experiences. It said research indicates that depression, the drug use, and antisocial behavior have a synergetic connection when compared against the child's ACEs, right? Drug use and antisocial behavior are defensive mechanisms that the students create for him or herself because of these ACEs, right? Because of these adverse childhood experiences, right? So you get high, that's self-medicated, right? I'm depressed, I'm anxious, I calm myself down with some weed, some water, something, right? Consistent with the research conducted, they said suicide ideation, student disengagement, and dropouts are linked to lack of feeling connected to the school. It indicates that the school that cultivates a culture where students can feel connected, even students who have endured ACEs, school attendance and engagement increases. So the school has to be the parent-like, right? You got to keep the people, the child safe, right? Woo! That's very difficult because if you have people coming in the community who are violent and abusive and aggressive, it's very hard to keep a student safe unless you, I'm just going to say drastic measures, drastic situations call for drastic measures. I'm just going to keep it like that. And y'all seen that movie? What's that movie? Lean On Me with the Joe Brown guy. I'm just going to say, take a look at that. He may have been breaking the law a lot of times he was doing it, but what he was trying to do was break the bad habits these students was bringing into the school. Break the bad habits the students were bringing into the school, the habits that I don't know if their parents gave them the foundation to function in a civil manner or, you know, even sometimes, you know, I don't know, back in the day, people were more civil, seems to me. Like now we just have a bunch of kids, they don't observe boundaries, the same kind of boundaries as were observed in maybe 50 years ago or something like that. So seems a little different, you know, like it's no more weight to after school stuff, like, you know, in the bathroom, you know, wait till we get back out away from the school. It's none of that. It's right now, and it's on like popcorn. So, and it gets worse than that. So research indicates that delinquent behavior, specifically violence and peer victimization and carrying weapons to school, are onset by ACEs, right? Adverse childhood experiences, right? I know I read a story about a guy, I don't know why I can't remember his name, King Vaughn. He's a Chicago drill rapper. He's really a Chicago street gangster, right? And he became a rapper, right? But in his story, they say one guy is telling a story about him. They jumped him on the bus, right, because they found out who he was and where he's from. And they say after that, he carried a gun to school every day. This guy is allegedly killed multiple people. Maybe in the double figures. I don't know. But he has allegedly murdered or been a co-conspirator in the murder of a lot of people, right? In the spirit of gang warfare, because, you know, these guys are, like, you kill my friend, I'm going to kill one or two of y'all. Or I'm going to always kill some of y'all because I just killed somebody. I just can't get over it. And this is how I'm going to solve my problem. I'm going to make you guys wish you never did that before, you know, kill my friends. So then they got the same people over there saying the same thing. So these guys just going back and forth murdering each other, right? They all come from families, right? All of this have to do with our ability to protect our children, because somewhere, there has to be an intervention with the root of these children. So the parents, you know, I don't know how involved parents might be in this situation, with this gang situation over there, because I don't know if they, like, parents are ex-gang members from the same gang that their kids are from. I don't know. But I just use him as an example. He carried a weapon in school, and this guy, he's a known shooter, right? He's a feared shooter at that. And he's not even, he's not like, a, he's nobody playing around with. He's dead now, you know. And it's kind of sad that he's dead, even though, regardless of him being a shooter, because I saw where this guy could really be a positive role model for people who come from where he comes from. He could really, you know, instead of being a role model of how to gangbang, he could be a role model and how not to or why not to. And, you know, maybe, you know, but he never got a chance to do that. I don't know if he was seeing it that way or not. But I just saw him as a person who could do that. So maybe his buddy might eventually do that, because you can't gangbang for the all of your life. You know, you're not going to be 80, 60 gangbanging. You know, so maybe he has a buddy, a brother of them. I hope that he eventually, you know, tries to turn it around and save lives. Because I think he has the power to do so, him and other, they call them drill rappers and things. I think they all have power to kind of turn this thing around, you know. But we gotta, you know, you gotta be willing to sacrifice. If you're willing to sacrifice your life, right, your time, you should be willing to sacrifice, you know, not sacrificing your life and your time, as in doing time, 20 to 40 years in jail for a homicide. You should, you know, to make life better in your community. I'm going to keep moving, because that's not what the show is. The show is not about those guys, but it's about what those guys do here in this section of the show, right? So we need to be able to protect our children from themselves. So as I said, that Bible verse of train a child in the way that he should go. That's what we got to do. We have to reinforce that with everybody. You know, on both sides of the street. You know, Crips, Bloods, I don't know how they do it, whoever's, you know, in it. It's sad that, you know, people have lost their lives, but if you don't like people losing their lives, the thing to do is to stop the killing. So parents have to be able to get out there and intervene. You cannot take part in that. You cannot buy guns for your kids, and I'm talking about adults and parents, or caregivers, or protective capacities belong to not just your mother and father. They belong to, protective capacity belongs to the tribe, right? And they take the tribe to raise a child. Protective capacity. This is protective capacity back and forth murdering each other. That's not going to help us. That's going to diminish us. It's going to create people like this brother, King Vaughn, and his friends who were sadly not here anymore. And truth be told, we need every one of them brothers. Every one of them. You know, and the sad thing, you know, I read his story, I felt kind of sad for him, because he was stuck on that hamster wheel, as my friend says. He's on the hamster wheel and he couldn't get off. He had a grand opportunity to get off the wheel. So I don't know if any of those guys even hear my show, but, you know, try to get off the wheel. Try to stop the madness. Think about your son, what you want for him, what your child, what do you want for your kid? What do you want for your family, your little brother? What do you want for them? You know, and yes, people have died, but let's, you know, end the violence. You know, if you don't like those people over there, just leave them alone. Stay away from them. Agree to disagree and, you know, stay out of each other's way. Till, you know, a couple of generations pass and you'll see this whole thing will go away. It won't go away if we keep murdering each other. All right, anyway. So that goes to the next thing, from eSchoolToday.com. It talks about the impact of poverty. They say poverty brings out a whole bunch of complications that affects usually depending on the kind of poverty in question, right? So, you know, you get the absolute poverty, like that third world poverty. And I just heard that they, I think it was Ecuador, they arrested, is it 6,000 suspected gang members? And they expect to arrest more. They had them all in underwear, white underwear. That's all they had on, bent over like they do in Russia, moving in jail, squatted behind each other like sardines, and had a big prison. They must have just built that just to arrest these guys. And that's what poverty may do. Some people, you know, in order to come up, they use whatever means necessary that they can, right? So I guess these people getting tired of the homicides and the, you know, people just running around doing what they want to do until they, you know, as I said, extreme circumstances require extreme measures. And so they've been extreme down there. So I know some human rights individuals are, you know, looking at that. Oh, you can't do that to a man. It's like, hey, but you can't just murder people, going around murdering people. You understand? This is a failure of the protective capacity of families, communities, and in this case, nation, to provide for their people. You know, understand, if you look at people who these people are, let's say the United States, you pledge allegiance to the flag, you got to get, if there's a war, they're going to draft your kid. Where's the protective capacity of the country, the government, toward the people? Where's that? You know, and we don't want to compare our standard of living to people in the world country. We want to know, because we live in this system, where is that capacity? Where is it that, you know, that we can depend on you to protect our interests, right? Anyway. Absolute poverty results in extreme hunger, starvation, and malnutrition, right? That's absolute poverty. That's that, you see that in mainly in third world countries. I'm not saying there's nobody starving in the United States. It probably is. But you'll see a lot of, you'll see it without looking for it in these so-called third world countries, right? Death rates rise, right? Relative poverty, on the other hand, forces people to engage in behavior that exposes them to diseases, right? While they may not starve to death, they may be living on unhealthy food, which ultimately weakened their immunity and exposed them to disease. That's very important, my dear, because that's going into my segue into protective of capacity, how we are not able to do it, because without the knowledge, you don't have knowledge of your environment, you cannot provide a safe environment or instruction for your child if you don't have knowledge yourself. And so it's enough tools out here for people to just find, to look and see what you're dealing with. It's no excuse. So basically, you know, infectious disease continue to blight up the lives of the poor across the world, right? So they talk about an estimated 40 million people are living with HIV or AIDS, with 3 million deaths in 2004. Every year there are 350 to 500 million cases of malaria, 1 million fatalities. Africa accounts for 90% of the malaria deaths, and African children account for over 80% of malaria victims worldwide, right? So relative poverty may cause people to indulge in social vices such as drugs, prostitution, petty crimes, as a means to meet their immediate needs, right? That will impact on your capacity to care for your child, right? In many developing countries, political leaders and rebel leaders take advantage and recruit young people, right? Especially those in relatively poverty, right? To fight their interests, fight for their interests in return for food and basic needs, right? That's stuff you do with a dog. You can steal a dog like that. Just keep, walk by him, keep feeding him. Get a little closer, feeding, get a little closer, feeding, touching, petting, feeding, walking, and taking a walk out with that dog, right? He's yours, right? So anyway, these folks are vulnerable if they do not comply, as they have no other way out of their situation. They don't have the protective capacity, right? So they have to, right, resort to crime just to eat, right? Economic people in absolute poverty simply cannot afford food, water, and shelter. They are not healthy enough to undertake any economic activity. They cannot send their young to school, and the youth cannot get any skills. That results in an economic breakdown of the community. So you can relate that to us right here. You're not getting educated. You're not going to school. You're not getting any skills. What do you think is going to happen? Perpetuate. You're just on the hamster wheel of not being able to protect, right? Not having protective capacities, right? Diminishing your protective capacity, not going to school, not getting skilled, just not doing anything to improve your quality of life, to improve you. Also, those in relative poverty have a bit of training or education, are forced to move out or migrate in search of better lives in the cities. And then what does that do, right? That deprives the rural areas of manpower, right? And makes this situation worse. So we do that here in the hood, right? Once we make that dough, we out. Because now we become a target in the hood, right? So they also migrate into cities. They end up in slums, increase population, and put pressure on amenities in the cities, right? So now they're competing. You see the immigrants coming, the Democrats flooding the United States with immigrants. It's going to impact on your protective capacity, right, to provide for your child. You think it's not? Just watch and see. Read Paul Anderson. He's telling you all about that. The vicious cycle of poverty. Poverty begets poverty. It is a concept that illustrates how poverty causes poverty and traps people in poverty unless an external intervention is applied to break the cycle. A mere 12% of the world's population uses 85% of its water, and they do not live in the third world. A mere 12% of the world's population uses 80% of... Something's wrong with that picture, right? So things that impact on your ability to provide care, right? Education, quality education, empowers people to take advantage of opportunities around them, as we just said, right? Health, food, and water. Well, you know you need water to live, so that's a no-brainer. Good health, food. You got to be able-bodied, right? Provision of skills and training. Get your education. Get your education, especially while it's free. Income redistribution. Government must extend its development programs such as roads, bridges, and other economic facilities to rural areas to make it easy for goods and services and farm produce to move to and from farming community. That's one very impoverished community. But we have this ability to get to food resources, right? But what kind of food resources are we getting to? Which is my question. So poverty is a human condition, being unable to obtain or provide a standard level of food, water, and or shelter for you or your family, right? They say billions enjoy an affluent style. More than a tenth of the world's population live in extreme poverty today. Poverty is not a consequence of limited global resources, but political and economic injustice, right? They talked about absolute poverty, right? And what that looks like, we just talked about relative poverty, looks like the content of the need, how one social group compares to others. So that might be how blacks compare to whites in America, right? Who's overrepresented or underrepresented, if you could be underrepresented in a poverty scheme, right? Numbers, right? The method of calculating America's poverty level was developed in the 1960s, right? The highest rate of poverty was 22% in the 1950s. The lowest rate was 10.5 in 2019. I said, that's pretty good, but that's not good for the 10.5, right? No man is free if one man is a slave. That's what I say. And there's no need for anybody to be impoverished. Your basic needs should be met. Work together. Anyway, they said at 1.2 per 1,000 Asian, we talk about violent crime arrests in major social groups in New York City, right? They talked about that. They talked about how the blacks had a higher violent crime rate than Asians, even though they equated the Asians being at the same poverty or same rate of poverty as blacks. I don't know about that. Anyway, the Asians were rates are relatively low. Illustrates what we call the crime adversity mismatch, a recurrent phenomenon, right? They weren't as high as black rates, right? So when it comes to violent crimes, murder, assault, robbery, and the like, history tells a complicated story. In the late 19th and early 20th century, impoverished Jewish, Polish, and German immigrants had relatively low crime rates, right? While disadvantaged Italian, Mexican, and Irish committed violent crimes at a high rate. So what does that say? So we had impoverished Jewish, Polish, and German immigrants, right? Had relatively low crime. They didn't have any. They had this was lower than the people that they treated worse, right? So fast forward at the day, right? It was the case that Asians were more disadvantaged. It was the case that Asians were more disadvantaged than blacks, but the latter had much higher offending rates. Right? So they're saying Asians were more disadvantaged than blacks, but blacks had a much higher offending rate. Why is it that poverty is not consistently related to crime? So I don't call it a disadvantage. But Asians being hung or an attack like black people in this country, I just want to know, or do they just stay in their place and they, you know, were they up in those trees? Just want to know. Or maybe what saved them is they don't, they, you know, that they really are close knit group. They don't really try to assimilate. Maybe that's it. I don't know. I don't even know if they don't do that. But I'm just saying. I'm just trying to guess how the Asians were more disadvantaged than blacks, as this article says. You know, but you know, I wouldn't even compare the two. A major reason that crime and violence are usually motivated by quarrels, personal grudges, perceived insults, and similar interpersonal conflicts, not by economic necessity. That might be true, but that's not absolute. So, and nothing is absolute, but I'm saying there are other reasons why people commit crimes. Like I said, that their lack of ability. Like they just say they have, but if I can't work and make, I steal and take. That will lead to crime, you know. And you, especially when you have this mental game you play with people about having material stuff and being a person who has material things, the new sneaker, the glasses, what those coats they was killing people, just all this nonsense, the gold, the car, the this to that, you know. All of that, that's psychological warfare, and parents have to be ready to instruct their children how to, you know, work those things off, because those things have killed some people, will kill people. You know what I'm saying? I think gold is those chains of God's been around the neck, people are snatching them, you know, Consequently, a decline in one's financial condition is not likely to cause violent criminal behavior. That's what this guy's saying, you know. So that explains why economic recession or depression does not produce a crime spike. They said violent crime declined, even though the country experienced some of the worst years of the Great Depression. Likewise, during the Great Recession in 2007 and 2009, when the economy tanked and crime fell. I don't know. Maybe they didn't have enough food to do crime. I don't know. But anyway, African Americans, for example, have a high violent crime rates from the late 19th century to the present. These patterns drive from their southern background, where whites had higher rates of violence than whites in other regions. Early Irish and Italian immigrants also had high crime rates until having moved into the middle class. They found that such violence became self-destructive, right? A group's history and experience, not biological determinants such as skin color or race, drive violent behavior. Now that makes sense right there, right? Because black people have a history of violence being perpetrated on them in this country, right? That's how you keep a slave. You don't keep a slave by giving him a piece of bread. You keep him by threat of violence, not even threat, by absolute guarantee that some violence is going to be perpetrated on them, that, you know, it's going to be an ugly situation if you don't do as I say do, right? So movement up the social ladder to the middle class is associated with sharp declines in violent crime, because they said the middle class had less to lose, therefore they're less likely to commit these crimes, right? I kind of see that. But doesn't explain, like, say, how we got these guys. Like I said, these rappers, these young boys, they millionaires, they still involved in crimes, they're actually being murdered and things like that. That doesn't explain that, right? Because that... what explains that is their life experiences, right? They're way past middle class. They're millionaires. They probably got $1 million almost around their neck, some of them. They dead. So, and speaking of, I'm just saying, going back to our capacity to protective capacity, we have to find a way to... I said, develop, encourage people to adhere to a higher moral standard, right? We have to value life. We don't do that. We're going to keep running in this thing, this type of thing right here. When we do get money, people just going to target you. That's why people with money move out of the hood, because you become a target. Your life no longer valued. Your life is valued as a target and a resource for somebody else to come up off of you, right? So that's not a good look. But that has something to do with our protective capacity as parents, how we raising these people, if we're raising them at all, you know. But I'm just saying, I know this is idealistic, but I'm just saying it. We just give people a moral and ethical standard, put a dent in some of the crimes, the homicides and the types of crimes that are going on here. People snatching people out of their cars, you know, murdering people, things like that. We can put that in their inner parts, and maybe they'd be like, hey, no, we don't do that, you know. Sometimes there's guys like that in that group. They don't agree with that, murdering people, but they stuck on that hamster wheel with those guys who are perpetuating it. You know what I'm saying? So we got to get people out of that cycle. I don't know how to get them out, but this is my suggestion. We got to put it inside of them, inside of their mind, in their hearts, in their spirituality. If you don't, this thing will continue. Because that will show in their behavior. You know what I'm saying? let's say, more affluent people avoid violent conflict, in effect, proceeding it to the poor, right? They have less to lose, so they are more likely to commit crime. I say they had this thing called the rational choice. People choose. The theory says the rational choice theory argues that individuals committing crimes are rational actors because their choices to commit crimes have the highest marginal benefit to them. This then argues that those who commit crimes expect the net benefits to be positive. Now, what I say to that is that some people just want to get away with the crimes they commit. That's positive. I got the money, and I'm not going to jail for it. Crime is a double-edged sword that destroys individuals and families. We must find a way to help individuals, families, help themselves, right? And we have to help them in a way that helps them socially, economically, and, like I said, morally, ethically, and spiritually. So or else we just put a Band-Aid on a wound, right? Households on or below the poverty level had more double the rate of violent victimization as persons in high-income households, right? That kind of supports the whole thing about the more money you have, the more you have to lose. But it doesn't speak to why these rappers, right? These gangbangers, I don't know if all of them are gangbangers or not. Some of them are gangbangers and well, whatever these guys are, street guys, I don't know. It doesn't explain why these guys can't live longer because they're dying. They're being murdered. So persons reporting violence, the percentage of persons reporting violence to police was also higher amongst households below the poverty level, right? So that will have an impact on violence, right? Rational thought process, we must first peel the onion back to what are the conditions, economic, social, political, psychological, that facilitate crime. Things like economic deprivation, disparities in politics, business practices, education, and health care. We must learn to deal, address, our impoverished condition in a positive manner, a manner that enhances the life of our community, our people, our nation. Yes, we are emotionally impacted upon by our impoverished condition or failure to economically improve our quality of life. It doesn't take money to actually improve your quality of life. We simply have to be willing to do so, right? We have to be willing to do what we can do for ourselves, individual by individual, couple by couple, and family by family. We may argue, what exactly is crime? Like, is it a crime for a man interest group to profit grossly, disproportionately to the through the economic benefits or earnings of those who work to actually make them wealthy? I remember I read an article that said it wasn't right to be wealthy. Something like that. It was some one person who said it was a sin to be wealthy. Anyway, is it a crime to poison resources, land, water, air, food, products, distribute and sell those resources and products for profit at the expense of the health of the people and the planet? Is that a crime? Somebody help me out with that. To assault the injury, the crime is legitimized. Have your actions protected by law. They have the actions protected by law. They're committing crimes against mankind, right? Crime is something that causes harm to someone else. Undue, right? It's not a war. So talk about plastic pollution and human issue, right? Over the past decades, natural materials used in manufacturing, such as paper, glass, and cotton, have been replaced with plastic, right? Plastic may affect your health in three ways. We eat, drink, and breathe microplastics every day. They particles may cause harm to your health once they're entered our body. Plastic products contain chemical additives associated with serious health problems, such as hormone-related cancers, infertility, and neural development disorders like ADHD and autism. All right. When plastics and microscopics end up in environment, they attract microorganisms such as bacteria. The first polyethylene, I can't even say it, PET, terephthalate, right? Plastic bottle was made in 1973. Why? Because it's cheaper and easier to manufacture and transport. If you drop it, it don't break. Glass bottle, you drop it, it breaks, right? And instead of glass getting into the environment, it causes problems, right? They are durable, can easily shatter, making them difficult to recycle. This can cause a dangerous environment, since the glass shards can create a safety hazard, right? The glass shards can create a safety hazard. They say the glass can create a safety hazard, right? But the bottles are, the plastic bottles are recyclable, extremely durable, and shatterproof. What? Your safety has nothing to do with the decision to use plastic. Money and profit does. Would you say that was the exact ideology of a drug dealer? Profit over people. I hear there is a mass of plastic bottles in the ocean about the size of Texas from CNN. The Great Pacific Patch is now so huge and permanent, right? They said the Great Pacific Patch, which is twice the size of Texas, is the largest accumulation of ocean plastic in the world, right? Daily exposure to forever chemicals cost the United States billions. They said this is from newlangorn.org, right? They said that researchers estimate medical costs and lost worker productivity from plastic explosions cost Americans billions of dollars. Maybe the petrol, plastic, and medical industries are working together. I don't know. Processed meat increase your risk of cancer, right? Chemicals like nitrates are also cooked in high heat, creates a polycyclic amine. And hydrocyclic amines, right? They suggest that you avoid processed meat, decreasing your portion size, replacing deli meat, and with alternative of like fish or tofu. They say that. I got, you know, tofu is a little questionable. So anyway, hydrocyclic amines, right? And polycyclic of aromatic hydrocarbons, PHAS, are chemicals formed with muscle meat, including beef, pork, fish, or poultry, is cooked using high-temperature methods such as pan frying or grilling directly over an open flame, right? This is, they cause changes in DNA that may increase the risk of cancer. May cause changes in DNA. What the hell? Right? So ACAs are formed with amino acids and sugars, and creatine react to high temperatures. PHAs are formed when fat and juices from meat grilled. Fat and juices of meat grilled directly over heated surfaces or open fires drip onto the surface or fire, causing flames of smoke. The smoke contains PHAs that then adhere to the surface of the meat. PHAs can also be formed during the smoking process, right? You know, smoked meat. Knowledge is priceless, and some say humans are not designed for meat consumption. Here we learn that how we cook our meat can be harmful. Genesis 2:29, right? And God said, "Behold, I have given you every herb bearing seed, which is upon the face of all the earth, and every tree, which is the fruit of the tree yielding seed. To you it shall be for meat." And I have been told if you need to cook it, you shouldn't eat it. Whatever the case, something is wrong with this picture. How can something so right, legal, be so wrong? How can you protect yourself, your family, if you don't know what's harming you? What's causing some of this ADHD, right? What's causing some of this infertility? This high estrogen levels and things like that, right? They said from Harvard Public Health, about 678,000 Americans die each year from chronic food illness. About 678,000 Americans die each year from chronic food illness, right? That is all the combat, that is more than all the combat deaths from the Revolutionary War through the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq. To know is priceless. You cannot defend yourself, your family, against a Trojan horse unless you can perceive that there is a Trojan horse. That is also taxation and no representation. What part of government by and for the people is this? Or is it government by and for a particular people? From SaludAmerica.org, unhealthy diet is a leading risk factor for death, causing more than 500,000 U.S. deaths in 2016. They implicated diet in 529,999 deaths from heart disease, stroke, diabetes, cancer, and other diseases in 2016, right? It is known that diet is killing Americans, yet corporations are allowed to produce, distribute food resources that contribute to the death of Americans. Why? Why the co-conspirators aren't held accountable for their actions? Why aren't they? Just as heroin dealers are guilty or co-conspirators in the death of the heroin user who ODs, so are interest groups, corporations, businesses who distribute and sell food that impairs, causes illness, disease, and causes death. Why does some entity, corporation, or business get a pass in contributing to the death of another human being and another person or business does it? Again, they legitimize their business or crime business. Economics founded and perpetuated by a product that destroys consumers is simply genocide. It is cruel and possible, a possible violation of the Nuremberg Code. The Nuremberg Code is a set of ethical research principles for human experimentation created by the court in the U.S. versus Brandt, one of the subsequent Nuremberg trials that were held after the Second World War. You know, they were experimenting people, right? Then, so purchasing these carcinogenic products is like poisoning your family, or like roach baits. Tobacco is all around us. It's a leading cause of cancer. There is a risk from smoking it yourself, but secondhand smoke is also risky. See, a little bit of exposure increases your risk. Unfortunately, it is well known that this toxin will destroy you, and secondhand smoke is at least just as deadly. A greater respect for life and the lives of others may assist in combating the lure to use tobacco or use it in the presence of others. It is suicide, homicide, infanticide, genocide, and a puff of smoke. Pollution, air from exhaust from the vehicles, lung cancer, cancer such as breast cancer. They say you consider wearing a mask or using air filters. What? It is not as if there aren't safer energy sources, solar energy, wind energy, bioenergy, geothermal energy, right? Hydropower. They say nuclear energy burns safer, but when that goes wrong in a bad way, right? I don't know about that one. They're talking about natural gas. Also, they said, I read about natural gas produces the chemical also. So maybe I don't know how that works better as an energy source. But those last two, I don't know about them. So we have all these products. We have alcohol, right, which is associated with liver cancer, breast cancer, throat cancer, right? What is going on here? These things are allowed to be sold in our community. If you don't know about them, you cannot protect your family from these things. So you have to seek knowledge. You have no excuse for not doing that. In order to increase your protective capacity, you must be knowledgeable, because we living in that kind of world. You got to read. Read the labels. If drug dealers are a major menace to society because of the impairment to the quality of life for individuals, families, and communities, why would these toxins and toxin distributors and sellers that impair the quality of life of individuals, families, and communities be identified as the menacing monsters that they are? Why won't they be identified that way? Cancer was the second leading cause of death after heart disease in the United States in 2020. Read the labels of products you want to purchase. Some of them tell you what they cause. And we've run out of time. We got 90 seconds left. I'm sorry. I saw a bean burger with a cancer warning on it. Weights, foods, dyes, using common foods, on snow removal equipment. I saw this thing that was said caused cancer. So I want to thank everybody for listening. Because we have to close up, but remember, each one, teach one. People have responsibility to inform themselves about the things that they come in contact with. It will impact on your capacity to provide. You have no protective capacity if you cannot stop corporations and businesses from poisoning you. Until next week, I want to thank Blog Talk Radio, all my callers and listeners. Thanks for calling in and listening, my brothers and sisters.
You will not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials, because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in four parts without commercial interruptions. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading a charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Spiro Agnew to eat hog maws confiscated from a Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by the Schaefer Award Theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia. The revolution will not give your mouth sex appeal. The revolution will not get rid of the nub. The revolution will not make you look 5 pounds thinner, because the revolution will not be televised, brother. There will be no pictures of you and Willie Mae pushing that shopping cart down the block on the dead run, or trying to slide that color TV into a stolen ambulance. NBC will not be able to predict the winner at 8:32 on Deport from 29 districts. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of Whitney Young being run out of Harlem on a rail with a brand new process. There will be no slow motion or still life of Roy Wilkins strolling through Watts in a red, black, and green liberation jumpsuit that he has been saving for just the proper occasion. Acres, Beverly Hillbillies, and Hooterville Junction will no longer be so damn relevant, and women will not care if Dick finally got down with Jane on Search for Tomorrow, because black people will be in the street looking for a brighter day. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no highlights on the 11 o'clock news and no pictures of Harry R. Woman Liberationist and Jackie Onassis blowing her nose. The theme song will not be written by Jim Webb or Francis Scott Key, nor sung by Glenn Campbell, Tom Jones, Johnny Cash, Engelbert Humperdinck, or The Rare Earth. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be right back after a message about a white tornado, white lightning, or white people. You will not have to worry about a dove in your bedroom, the tiger in your tank, or the giant in your toilet bowl. The revolution will not go better with Coke. The revolution will not fight germs that may cause bad breath. The revolution will put you in the driver's seat. The revolution will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised. The revolution will be no rerun, brothers. The revolution will be live.